Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today on the Grave Talks, Order of Exorcism, a conversation with Timothy Earle. Timothy Earle is an employee of the Advent International Order of Exorcists and reports directly to Archbishop James Cloud, Chief Exorcist. His adventure began in 1997 when he began collecting EVPs without any sort of ill intentions. Nevertheless, things moved fast in a different direction, and his wife was subjected to a demonic assault. His life has been profiled in a number of documentaries and television series since. Today, we learned what it takes for an exorcist to take on a case and how he's been able to assist the living in escaping evil and how he's been able to do so successfully. Does the demonic attack those who are already mentally ill? Those questions and more we discuss with Timothy on the Grave Talks.
Well, it started in roughly 1997. My wife and I were foster parents. And, you know, I had a healthy interest in the paranormal, and we needed a way to entertain all these children. So we head out to the local haunts and with tape recorders and flashlights and, you know, started speaking into the night, so to speak. And we started getting responses. You know, we started coming home with EVPs, and mind you, this is the old days. This is analog. This is,
yep,
cassette tapes, and so everything was still very in its infancy. I mean, paranormal research and ghost hunting has gone back decades prior to that. However, the technology just was not really developed.
Sure.
And I started getting interested in it and engaging in it. And, I have to admit, we brought something home, and it turned out to be a real negative experience for us. And unfortunately, my wife ended up getting the brunt of what it is this entity did. And it's her story. I won't go into details. But what it did was it actually sparked me to start researching a little deeper and getting into just what it is as far as tradition, what it is as far as research has been done up to date. And being born Catholic, we call it cradle Catholic, so I was born into the church. I already was, had a pre-programming into my belief system, which I still follow today for the most part. I found out that the information just really wasn't readily available to the typical layman. So myself, being a congregant of the local parish, I went to the priest and explained what happened and what was happening, and my frustration about not being able to find anything. And what I did find with him is that the Catholic Church at the time, now this is in the 90s, so the Catholic Church at the time was very hesitant to engage in anything demonic of nature. Sure, there were exorcists. Sure, there were still ongoing cases, but there's few exorcists, and they're highly controlled at the archdiocese level. You didn't have access to them, so it'd have to be an escalation. And the bishop that we were under at the time had no inclination to engage in any such nonsense, so to speak. So I was left to my own devices. But this priest, and I will not name his name, did help me. Got me access to libraries that I normally wouldn't have access. He would request books to be sent to him, and I, of course, you know, would read them. So we engaged in what everybody would call spiritual warfare in a true sense with this entity, and ended up reigning successful. And having done so, the priest shared this information with another archbishop who gave me a call and had me on the phone for an hour in a recruitment call, trying to, you know, get me to sign up to assisting him and other priests. And at the time, bear in mind, I was also a licensed counselor. So I had, you know, some training, formal training as far as that's concerned, to be able to console people who are having problems with the supernatural. So I agreed to do so. And so with that, I mean, unfortunately, that archbishop and I have parted ways, but I've been doing it since. I'm working for the Advent International Order of Exorcists. I report to Archbishop James Cloud. He is our chief exorcist. And to be fair to you and everybody, I am a layman. I am not an ordained minister or deacon. I've been requested to do so. However, I just don't think that that's what my path is. So my abilities or my permissions or my authorizations are limited. I can perform exorcisms, but there's three types of exorcisms. So there's the simple, there's the major, and then there's the basic. So one everybody thinks about is the major exorcism, where somebody's possessed or partially possessed, and a priest or a bishop comes in and performs an exorcism, removing a spirit from the physical being. The simple exorcism is performing an exorcism on a place or object. That I can perform. And I'm supposed to get permission from the bishop or archbishop that I report to, but James Cloud, he just wants me to do it. He doesn't really want to be bothered so much. So I do perform simple exorcisms. And then a basic exorcism is actually a baptism is an exorcism. When you say the Lord's Prayer, that is actually a basic exorcism. So there's all sorts of smaller exorcisms that can be done in prayer that people do without realizing that they do it. So how this works is a person or a congregant will have a complaint that they're having issues with the supernatural. And of course, everybody's terrified. So it's automatically classified as demonic. Mm-hmm. The parish priests simply are not equipped to be able to run out to every time they receive a call. The exorcists are not either. They have parishional duties. They're the priests that you see serving mass, giving weddings. They're just, and I don't want to say they're average everyday Joe, because actual exorcists like of that nature are not average by any means. They're sought out, specifically picked, handpicked by the bishops, and for their demeanor, for their humble attitude towards God and Christ, and they live a specific lifestyle of pure I'm trying to think of the word. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to find the word. Sure. They simply live a lifestyle of purity that a regular priest would not, and then you or I would want. And there's reasons for that, which I'll get into.
Okay.
But So the complaint comes in, the priest will escalate it to his bishop. The bishop will call my bishop will call me. You see how the circle goes. Mm-hmm. I get a case, and my role and responsibility is to go visit the people and find out what's really going on, right? So I could have a weekend of visiting up to five different families over 250 miles and then have 4 months of no activity. It's really strange. My job is to find out first and foremost what's really going on. And the, you know, the educator will know a lot of this is, especially when people are complaining that they're being attacked by demons, there's a lot of mental illness involved.
Sure.
Right. I am not a licensed psychologist or psychiatrist by any means, and I can't diagnose anybody, but I can identify that this is a situation where we need to steer them towards social services or whatever available resources would be in the region.
How receptive are people to that answer when they think, number one, they someone's reached out with them saying, we think we need an exorcist. You show up and you realize, no, this person's like a borderline or something.
Right.
And you tell them, you know, you can't diagnose them, but you're like, I really don't think you're possessed. I think you have mental health issues. Is that received? Oh, thank you. Or is it received more like, no, it's the devil?
So, you know, I some people know that they're on lithium.
Sure.
Know that they're on Seroquel at, you know, nuts 900 milligrams to suppress them.
Yeah.
In fact, to point, there was even one poor gal who her brother was already diagnosed with a delusional disorder, and it was a schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's hereditary, and she was full-flung into it. And she said she hadn't been diagnosed, but yes, she was medicated, but she hadn't been taking her meds. She was using meth instead because it was cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
So she was adamant that she was being attacked and it wasn't her mental illness. So there's a lot of denial. The denial runs deep. However, it's real easy for me to say, look, I think that we need to see a doctor first, because if you're going to need a exorcism, the church will require a doctor's clearance. It's that simple.
Sure.
A priest is not going to go perform a major exorcism on a person for legal reasons, you know?
Yeah.
But it's also dangerous to perform an exorcism on somebody, because you're actually opening up that person's spirit or energy, you know, and to dive into it. And if there's nothing there, you could just be opening them up to allow something to come in. So there's good reasons for it, but there's many court cases involved where priests have been sued, churches have been sued of an overzealous priest performing an exorcism on somebody with a mental illness and then with a real negative outcome. Okay. So it's a check mark that has to happen.
Sure. So it's not necessarily good luck, we think you're sick. It's more so, we'd love to help you more, but first you need to go be evaluated and see what they say. And then it's up to them to take that step. And if they take that step, if the doctor says, yes, this is what we think is going on, then you can safely walk away and say, okay, now we know what that is. We hope you get the help that you need.
Absolutely. And if you know, and we do have a couple of, we have a couple of psychiatrists. I'm sorry, they're both psychologists. I want to be clear about that.
Sure.
Who have completed these evaluations for me and given me reports. And of course, you know, there's only so much they can share. And personal possession is very rare. I've actually been in doing this for the past, so I actually started this in 97, right? And I think I've come across about 7 legitimate demonic possessions, mm-hmm. full or partial possessions. And what I would say is legitimate, but at the end of the day, the vast majority of it is going to be overactive imaginations, or they could have haunts that are human in nature. Okay, so when we say the word demon, I mean, there's a lot of connotation to it. Everybody immediately goes to fallen angels, Satan and his army. But there's a lot of ways to define what a demon is. So, and if you're talking about the spiritual world, first off, there's more than one sect of fallen angels. There's multiple sects of angels that fell, watchers being another. They're described in the Book of Enoch, and it briefly mentioned in the Book of Genesis. And then they had children with human wives or human women, and those are the Nephilim. I'm sure you've heard that word. Mm-hmm. God smited the Nephilim. They were the giants that roamed the earth. God smited them and killed them all off in the flood. Well, they were human, so they had souls. All right, so they're still roaming around out there in the spiritual world, and we've run into them as well. Then there's, and you know, Christ nor God in any of the texts never said there weren't other spiritual entities. We do run into spiritual entities that are not a fallen angel, that are not human and are evil in nature. They absolutely do exist. One of the ways I explained it is, you know, you look at our biodiversity here on Earth. Now you're crossing over into another, you know, dimension. You're going to have spiritual diversity there. So there are other types of spirits out there that you can interact with. And then a human can be a demon as well. So, and that's the vast majority of what I run into as far as something that would be acting demonic. Mm-hmm. An actual human spirit, someone who has passed. They're upset. They don't like the people. They're attacking the people, and they want them out. They're doing things of that nature, and you have demonic symptoms. Absolutely, very simple. Very simple to call them a demon, but you really have to go through what's called a process of discernment, and that's where we separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. That is, we don't perform ghost hunts or paranormal investigations, as everybody's calling it now. We don't do that. It will look like that, but the difference is we're walking in with authority. You're going to hear us. We're going to say specific prayers. We're going to call in angels and saints. We're going to call in the power of the Holy Spirit. We're going to spend, and if it's an exorcism, we're going to spend, you know, in the rite of exorcism, the first third of the exorcism is just asserting authority over whatever spirits are there, asserting your dominance, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So we have methods that are, you know, we come in and we immediately bind any spirits that are there. We immediately lay down the law of how this is going to happen. And of course, a true demon is not going to really respect you right away. You know, we step up the process and keep going through it, ultimately to identify what type of spiritual or what entity is there, what type of spiritual activity is there. And then once we identify what it is, that's when we can address it. Some of the human spirits, you know, they just simply want to coexist. In the Catholic belief system, we have what's called purgatory. There's many stories about purgatory from our saints, and I'll just paraphrase it here, and that is, when we pass, we are not of a vibration that's high enough to be able to enter into heaven, and we're not a vibration low enough to enter into hell. So therefore, we're in this limbo or purgatory. And we are given the opportunity to work on ourselves to increase that spiritual energy to be able to ascend into heaven. There's got to be a connection there. The whole Christian way of life is supposed to build you to be able to make that connection to heaven. You live a passive life. You live life of love and light and beauty. You know, it sounds all familiar, right, to a lot of religions. So that way, when you do pass, you make that connection into the realm of what is heaven and be able to ascend into it. If you're not ready, but you're not going to go to hell, there you are in purgatory.
So is purgatory really more, is that where there's living, you know, souls roaming the earth? Is earth purgatory?
So yes and no.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I don't know how I'm going to get through this. Thanks a lot, Tony.
I have a list here that, as you've been talking, I just keep coming up with questions.
Oh, good.
I'm just great. Typing away. I'm like, and then I'm like, we're going to be doing a lot of backtracking here eventually.
Right. Okay. So the scientific community is doing, my opinion, and actually a lot in the ministry's opinion, justice to what we have found through our investigations, our interaction with the spirit world. And that is, you know, there's parallels, right? So there's these parallel worlds. And if you even think about it, I mean, let's go back to Christ. Christ had to be a special person, a special spirit that could pass and then punch his way into the realm we call heaven, right?
Sure.
So, and we're supposed to live Christ-like to be able to do the same. Okay. He created that doorway. Okay. So the path's created, the doorway's created. We have to create ourselves to be able to go through that. If we don't do that, we go into this other realm, and that realm is within what we call the principality.
Okay.
So if you go back to the fall of Satan, Satan's actually given kingdom of this world and the world peripheral to it. So that would be the spirit world as well. Meaning purgatory.
Okay.
He's still tempting you. There's still evil spirits there. They're still coming after you. You still have danger of going to hell. And people, you know, still have free will when they're in purgatory. So that free will, you know, if somebody's an asshole when they pass, you know, they're going to be an asshole in purgatory, right? They're going to be attacking his family.
But they have their free will to say, I was a total fuck up my whole life and treated everybody like shit. I'm going to change my ways right now. They have that ability in purgatory, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, okay. You know, there are spirits that'll, prayer helps these people. So if you have a loved one in purgatory who passes, you say typically in the Catholic religion, a rosary for them. My brother has passed. My mother prays for him daily. Mm-hmm. Says a rosary for him daily. I do one weekly. And the prayers will help. Yeah, if they're an ass, they can be attacking the family, doing things sexually, doing things mentally, physically, making them ill. Some want to kill the living, just, you know, as murderous as they were in life.
Yeah.
But
it's like their odds of changing kind of the same as they were in real life, where it's like, right. Well, that person didn't change while they were here. Why exactly would they change over there? I would think maybe the direct threat of hell might be a something that makes someone change because, oh, you're over here now. This is just real.
Yeah, you think they would, right?
Yeah, I mean, but we learned just how much people dig in.
Jeez. You know, I mean, I love that meme, meteors heading towards Earth, and we're going to meme about it till we die.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of the same sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So depending on how they're behaving and who they are, is how remedies we bring to the table.
Okay.
Some we exist. Some need a funeral rite provided, last rites. Some need a full on exorcism, just as if they were an actual demon. So, and all of that I can actually do.
Okay.
And depending on how bad it is, you know, I may call in some help. I have some peripheral help in the major cities around.
Uh-huh.
And, but for the most part, we're lone soldiers. So, but if it is a demon and somebody is possessed, there's five stages of possession, and your listeners are going to start screaming back into the mic, no, there's three. Well, no, there's actually five.
Okay. What are they?
Three have been popularized by the Catholic Church, but there's actually five. First is temptation. Everybody always forgets about that. Because the goal of a demon is to get you to self-destruction. So they're going to tempt you into self-destruction. And that can be defined however you want to define it, but they want you to destroy yourselves, even if you're happy doing it. If you're happy, you're rich, you're living the lifestyle, but you're still destroying yourself, they'll leave you alone. So there's the temptation. Now, infestation. Right. I've been awake since 2:30.
Hey, I get it. I do it all the time.
Infestation and oppression. So those two will actually flop each other. So oppression is where you're having physical illnesses, you're having seeing things, hearing things, terrifying you. Your car can break down, your finances can go to crap, your relationships are lost, marriages are broken, all sorts of things can happen during the oppressive stage. And infestation is just simply where they're just taking control of the house. You have the PK activity, things fly around the house, things disappear, reappear. You have phantom smells, you start seeing things in pictures. So, and again, those two can kind of bleed over each other. They can swap places. They're really not set. And then number four and five is partial possession, perfect possession. Partial possession is where the demon is trying to take control of you. And you'll black out and you'll have activities that happen you don't realize that you're doing. And people say you did this and you hadn't been drinking, you don't remember it. Well, that's a partial possession. Perfect possession is where they've just worn you down and you're tired. You just want to go to sleep. You just wanted to go away. And you finally say, okay, you know what? Fine. You can have my body. Just leave me alone. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, perfect possession is even rarer still. But, and it's, that's, you know, Anna Louise was perfect possession. And, you know, she ended up dying over it. So. It's a bad prognosis if somebody's perfectly possessed.
Where they've almost given up themselves and there's not a lot of energy to fight back, essentially.
Right, yeah. Right.
That wraps up part one of our conversation of a 3-part episode today. Tomorrow, we will continue with part two, available for everyone. Then an exclusive part three for our supporters and subscribers, gravekeepers, as we call them. You want to hear it all right now. If you want to hear part two as of immediately and get part three, simply become a supporter. Sign up right now through Apple Podcasts. You'll get access to this entire episode right this second before everybody else, as well as access to all of our episodes in their entirety, including advanced episodes as well, interviews you've not even heard of yet. To get it all, simply sign up through Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Try it for 3 days free. If you're not a user of Apple Podcasts, simply go to patreon.com/thegravetalks or search The Grave Talks and you'll find us there or directly through our website, thegravetalks.com, and click Become a Gravekeeper. Get all the content commercial free and a ton of extras as well. We greatly appreciate your support. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. This is the story of the one.
As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. All so that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Chances are, you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info, and if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.